Thanks for tuning in to episode number 22 of Does Not Compute. You've probably heard me talk about our first sponsor before. It's Hired. If you're looking for a job in pretty much any of the major tech hubs in North America or Europe, Hired is definitely the place you should be looking. They work with over 3,000 companies in both continents, from tiny startups to massive public corporations. Those companies are looking for great developers and designers for full-time and contract positions. Once you're signed up with Hired, you'll get 5 or more interview requests per week. Every one of those lists salary and equity as soon as you get it, which makes it incredibly easy to decide which companies you want to talk to. Using Hired is not only totally free, they will actually pay you $1,000 as a way to say thanks when you find your new job for them. Hired is super cool and makes the process of finding your next job much less painful. Now, remember that $1,000 bonus I mentioned? If you sign up at hired.com/doesnotcompute, Hired will turn it into a $2,000 bonus instead. Today's second sponsor makes it incredibly simple to deploy SSD-backed virtual machines in less than a minute. Yep, I'm talking about Linode. If you want to do something on the internet, like run Docker containers, set up your own private VPN or Git server, or pretty much anything else, Linode makes it incredibly simple. They let you deploy your own virtual servers on their professional-grade hardware for as little as 10 bucks a month. I'm talking about all SSD storage, Intel E5 processors, and a 40 gigabit network. They're real VPSs on real server hardware. Linode also provides great tools to help make your DevOps life easier. They've got node balancers, which make building out a load balance service incredibly easy, super simple backups, and great server metrics powered by Longview. Since all the billing is hourly, you can spin up new servers whenever you need without having to worry about contracts or anything like that. Sign up today at linode.com/doesnotcompute using the promo code doesnotcompute20 to get $20 in credit. $20 will get you up to 2 months of your own private virtual machine for free.
So, Paul, I don't know why I always do this to myself, but I decided this last week on Tuesday that I was going to use JetBrains products solely for development for 2 weeks. You want to know what happened?
What happened, Sean?
I lasted 2 hours on the first day, and then I was back into Sublime.
Not bad. That's probably longer than I would have gotten.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure what started this whole idea. I guess I'm always kind of switching around. I mean, I'm pretty proficient in Vim, and I hop back and forth between Vim and Sublime and sometimes Atom, but most recently I've been using Sublime again for maybe the past 4 months. But I was on YouTube and I saw a couple of videos, albeit marketing videos, but I saw a couple of videos that made the code completion look pretty awesome. So I decided to try it. And in the past, my biggest aversion to using the JetBrains stuff is, to me, the UI feels really kind of clunky.
Well, how's the auto-completion been?
Pretty good, actually.
Is it everything you were expecting?
Yeah, I mean, granted, I decided to do this when I'm working on finishing a project and I had to ship it by Friday, I think it was. So I tend to choose really bad times to do this stuff. So for the docs that I read, it was pretty okay. I mean, I can't say that like it blows Sublime out of the water yet, but then again, I can't say that I've read all of the docs and really tried to jump in and learn it inside out.
For sure. I think it's a pretty common thing for developers to underestimate just how much of a big undertaking it is to switch to a new editor. It's pretty massive, especially if you're very proficient in the one that you normally use. It's a giant undertaking where you are going to be a lot slower for at least a while.
Yeah, I think what made it easy for me to switch between Sublime and Atom so much was that the Atom shortcuts were pretty much identical to Sublime's. So when I open up a file, you know, I'm using Atom just as I would Sublime, and I don't notice anything different beyond that I'm not in Sublime. Whereas I open up WebStorm, and the keyboard shortcuts are completely different. Not to say that's a bad thing, it's just something else to learn. And I've been using Sublime and Atom for a while, so those keyboard shortcuts are pretty well ingrained into my muscle memory. So I end up doing things like spamming these keyboard shortcuts, and I'm like, why is this not working? You know, and maybe I'm screwing my code up. You know, the keyboard shortcuts are doing different things than I expect. So it took some conscious effort to kind of slow down and actually think about what I was doing. They also have kind of a package manager built into it, similar to Sublime's package manager. And I found a plugin called Promote Keys. And that plugin, what it does is if you do any action with the mouse that can be done with the keyboard, it actually pops a box up. And it says, this is the keyboard shortcut you could have used to do that. And you've used this box X number of times, which was kind of cool.
That's pretty awesome. I really like that idea.
Yeah, yeah. So it kind of trains you as you go. But what ended up happening was me getting frustrated with that box because you have to dismiss it. And so I'm in a hurry trying to ship stuff, you know, for client changes. And this box is like nagging me. I mean, it's doing its job. It was just me kind of being in a hurry.
I know we've mentioned this on the show before, but OS X does have, in almost every app, the command shift forward slash shortcut, which opens the help menu. And you can type in there, and it, as you're typing, it will filter down all the options in all the menus. And you can just hit enter when you get on the one you want. But kind of the way I use that to train myself is as I'm typing in those shortcuts, I actually look in the menus and see what their keyboard shortcuts are. So next time, I don't even have to use the command shift forward slash keyboard shortcut as a pseudo keyboard shortcut. I can actually do the real one. And so that's kind of a great way to train yourself, I think, in any program if you want to learn its shortcuts.
Right. And I actually was using that quite a bit. Another thing to know about the JetBrains stuff is that there always seems to be a JetBrains way of doing things. So in our case, we're really used to using command shift forward slash to search through the menus, right? JetBrains actually has a pop-up. I think it's command shift A. And you hit that and it opens a pop-up, and it's kind of like Command Shift P in Sublime where you can pretty much do any action. But the JetBrains version is a little more powerful because you can even search through like settings. You can turn certain settings on and off for just that split, or you can turn it on and off for program-wide. For example, if you want to show white space in just one file, you can do that. You would hit Command Shift A and type white space, and that menu, it's kind of just like filters it out, everything else out. So you'd see that one setting left, and you could turn it on and off. It has little toggle buttons next to the list. But you can do anything you can do in the app, you can do in this little pop-up, which was pretty handy. So after I figured that out, I found myself using that quite a bit.
That sounds really cool. I love features like that are built into applications. They make it so much easier to explore and learn as you're using it to be productive, which I think is great, especially for professional software.
Yeah, and granted, in the past I've never really used any IDEs. I mean, I've used Xcode a little bit, nothing major. So I'm not really familiar with what I should be getting or expecting from an IDE. But mainly what I wanted was what I saw like on their website. Like, for example, I'm working on some Rails apps, and so RubyMine says, hey, we can automatically connect your database, and you can run the consoles and queries from within the app. And we can do this from within the app. We can do that from within the app. So I'm not having to constantly switch windows. I've never really used an IDE a lot before. I think the most familiar I've been with an IDE is Xcode, and I haven't really done anything there beyond tutorials, you know, introducing you into building Swift apps. So I guess I'm not really sure what exactly I'm looking for when I'm using JetBrains stuff, but maybe it's just that I'm biting what they're selling on their marketing pages.
Yeah, and I don't think there's necessarily anything wrong with that. Like, there are some really cool things about having an IDE, about having this tool that is very built out specifically for what you're trying to do. That can be super useful. I've done a fair bit of work in Xcode with Objective-C and Swift projects, and in a past life, some Visual Studio stuff with C Sharp. And they are both pretty great because they can autocomplete amazing, amazing things for you. In the case of Objective-C especially, which is a very verbose language, I'll get full lines autocompleted for me all the time, just for free. It just works. I'll type 4 characters and it will write out an additional 100 characters. It's pretty amazing what these purpose-built tools can do. for me personally, for languages more like Ruby and Python, kind of these scripty interpreted languages, I've never found that to be as big of an advantage. In Sublime Text 3, there's actually jump to definition, which is good enough for my needs most of the time. You can just put your cursor over any given class name or whatever that happens to be, a variable name, and hit Option Command down arrow, and it'll jump you right to what that thing is. And it's pretty smart. It's not perfect, and it's definitely not the same as having an amazing autocomplete, but it gets you a lot of the way there, especially considering that those languages generally have a lot less typing in that sort of way.
Yeah, I can definitely see where Sublime works well enough for what I need. I mean, so far it's done everything that I've needed. I do use jump to definition quite a bit. I use it pretty much on any project that I'm working on. But maybe I'm just curious, and maybe, you know, there are people out there that say, oh, I swear by this IDE life. And I guess I'm just curious. So when I actually paid for a month, I signed up for the monthly membership, and I said, I'm going to use this for the first couple of weeks of the first month. And I haven't done that yet. I keep switching. By the end of the day, I'm back in Sublime, but I'm going to keep doing it, and maybe next week we can talk more as I'm more learned on this subject.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. I'd love to hear your thoughts as you get a little bit more into that world, because I think it is something that people tend to just start with one or the other and then stick with it forever. So it's pretty cool that you're trying out the other side, as it were, crossing the aisle.
Crossing the aisle. If Nick ever finds out, I'll never hear the end of it.
Alrighty, so I want to talk about a cool tool, Sean, except this time it's something I just released.
What is it this time, Paul?
This is called Motif. This is something I built out for Imagix. And what it does is it automatically generates really nice looking branded OG images for you. Now, for anybody who doesn't know what an OG image is, OG in this case stands for Open Graph. This is a standard that Facebook has really promoted over the last few years. And it's whenever you paste a link into Facebook or Twitter and you see that they automatically pull in images and text and all that kind of metadata stuff, that typically comes from OG tags. So one of the ones that you can have there is an OG image, which of course normally would just be a photo. But what Motif lets you do is really simply enter any URL and get a nice image overlaid with your brand color. You can add your logo on it, as well as some text, and then position all that and have a template that you can reuse across your entire site to have these awesome OG images that show up in branded content on Facebook and other social networks.
Now, I've had a chance to mess with this a little bit, Paul, and I have to say that it is very well put together. I mean, being able to change the information in one spot and having it update everywhere is pretty nice. It feels really polished. What were the technologies that you used to put this together?
So as a whole, it's a Ruby on Rails app, but on the front end side, I'm using Vue, of course, and on the back end, actually, a lot of the magical processing stuff is handled with Phantom.js. So this was kind of interesting because it was the first time that I'd used Vue for anything big since 1.0 was released. Things have changed quite a bit in Vue land since 1.0, so it was a pretty big change. But once I got used to everything, it was amazing. Like, it's even better than it was before.
Yeah, once 1.0 came out and the syntax lock kind of happened, it's been really great. And it's been maturing really fast, too. And like now it's at like 1.0.16, I believe.
Yeah, I think something around there.
So now that you're able to use Vue post 1.0, what would you say was the thing that you had to do that Vue made it the most easy to do?
I think just having really simple, easy to build out components was probably the nicest benefit. Obviously, that's a bit generic, but as an example, if you're using Motif and you enter a URL, it'll give you this display, like a preview of what your image is going to look like, along with some tools to edit it. And then down below, it also shows a different aspect ratio of the photo because it can output different aspect ratios depending on which service is requesting the image. So Facebook might want one size, Reddit wants a different size, Twitter wants a different shape, and we want to accommodate all those automatically. So we're showing beforehand what it's going to look like at various sizes and shapes. And I actually just made a component called, I think it was called Image Previewer or something like that. And I just dropped it in two separate places and it just works. Anytime you change one of these options, like if I go in and change the font family, both of them automatically do their reloading process and then just show up correctly. And that was almost no work for me to duplicate, which I thought was pretty amazing.
Right. The more and more that I end up making these little components that are reusable, the more it just makes my life easier. It saves me time, saves me frustration. I can't recommend it enough. I feel like every developer that I talk to now, I end up saying something about Vue, which maybe people might be getting sick of it, but I really do like it that much.
Yeah, that's been my experience too. I've been telling people for a long time now, and once anybody tries it, even just once, they're hooked. It's that good. It is so, so awesome. Evan and the whole team working on Vue has just done an incredible, incredible job. They're doing work that rivals what some of the biggest teams on the planet are doing, and it's just a couple people.
Yeah, it's been great. I believe if you look on the repo, it has a time to issues closed, and it's pretty unreal, his responsiveness. And we've said before in the past that a good tool both saves you time and effort, right? Vue has been doing that for me and the developers I've been working with. So we've just been, for now, making snippets with different components we've been creating. We've been sharing them and reusing them on other sites. And it's made development so much faster.
It really is a big deal. I know we've been talking about Vue for I think the whole time we've been doing this podcast pretty much. But if you haven't looked at it, make sure you look at it. It will change how you're writing code. Even if you're new to JavaScript, I would say that Vue is a pretty safe bet to jump in on.
So back to Motif. Paul, this looks like something that I will probably end up using on most every site that I work on coming up, because this is something that I have to end up doing on every site, right? And if I'm making maybe a static marketing site for a customer, there might be one static OG image. Or if that site has a couple of different pages, there might be one static OG image that is shared across them. Whereas if the site has a CMS behind it, I might use a featured image or something out of a blog post maybe for the OG image. But this seems like something I could just drop in, right? I could make a mix in for it or something like that, drop it in, and I would have for this client custom OG images that match the content of the page perfectly.
Yeah, so as soon as you've gone through Motif using an example URL on your site and built out something you liked, like position the text, change the font family, changed all the colors, and get your logo all positioned nice and whatever you need to do there, after those design changes are made, you'll get a URL. And you can copy that out, and it's just powered by query string parameters. So if you're using a CMS-powered site, whether that's Rails or WordPress or Jekyll or pretty much anything, you can just use that same URL and swap out the URL and image URL query string params, and you'll get a completely custom image for every page on your website automatically. So even if you were to leave the image URL one the same, you would get the same image background, but it would be branded with your logo and colors, and it would automatically pull in the title of that web page. So every page on your site would still get a unique OG image, even though you only had the one base image to work from.
Right. And this is something that you're encouraging everyone to just go forward and use?
Yep. This is a completely free service that we've built out. It is pretty much just something we thought would be awesome and hopefully get people thinking about other cool things they could use Imagix for. So it's totally free and anybody's welcome to try it out, whether you're working with a single page site or a small blog or something super massive. You're more than welcome to use it for any of those cases.
Well, I definitely will take you up on that, and I might be submitting a couple of plugins for maybe Statamic and some other things I've been using.
That would be awesome, yeah. If anybody wants to check that out, we will have a link in show notes, but it's also just motif.imagix.com. That's I-M-G-I-X. And you can go there, play around with it. Even if you're not going to use it, see if you can break it. Send me some bugs. So a couple of interesting things came up for me while I was building out Motif, actually, that I wanted to chat a little bit about. The first one of those is that there does not seem to be a good JavaScript color picker that doesn't require jQuery anywhere, as far as I've been able to see. It would be really cool if somebody in the community could either link me to one, or build one, because I would share that so much. I would send that to everybody I know and absolutely promote the heck out of it as much as possible, because this is a pretty big need. A lot of apps need color pickers, and all of them are either old and not maintained, or they require jQuery. And I think something without any dependencies would be incredible there. So the second interesting thing that came up here is that we actually found a feature for Imagix while I was building this out. We have a feature called the text endpoint, where you can basically generate an arbitrary blank image using text that you pass in. And we accept UTF-8 encoded text, which is awesome for both i18n as well as stuff like emoji. It's just kind of handy to have that. But kind of the issue is that once you're building out these URLs that you embed in other URLs, and sometimes you take those second URLs and embed those in other URLs, you have so many different layers of URL encoding that it becomes almost impossible to generate those in any reasonable kind of way. So what we actually ended up doing is building out a full second set of parameters. Any param now on Imagix, you can just append 64 to. So instead of, for example, TXT, you can send us TXT64. And that will trigger us decoding that string as a base64 string. So essentially, no matter how deep you're nesting now, you can just take all those URLs and collapse them into a base64 string and pass that along. And it makes things a lot easier.
I personally find it really interesting that you were able to come up with a feature that should be implemented into the actual product by building something for people to use, right? So it's almost like if you were the customer at that point and you're building a tool that uses Imagix, and then you were like, hey, here's something that can be improved. Or maybe not even here's something that can be improved, but here's just something that would be useful.
Right. So I think the actual takeaway from that, for me at least, was that we only found this as a solution because we were dogfooding. We were using our own product internally. And I think that's such an important thing to do. If you're any sort of software company, you should definitely be using the thing that you make, because things will become so much more clear to you once you're not only the builder, but also the person consuming this. It makes it so much easier to make improvements that aren't just arbitrary. They're improvements that are actually going to help people using your product day to day.
I mean, that goes back to anybody that makes anything, right? If you make guitars, you probably should play the guitars that you make so you know if they're any good, you know, or so you know if you need to make any changes, or if you make surfboards, if you make food, you know, test your food before you put it out there. It's just, to me, it's common sense.
Right. And that's something that chefs do even during the cooking process. They're constantly tasting and refining based on that. And it's a very similar concept, where anytime you're producing something for other people, you should make sure that you also fall into that category of people that want to use that thing. It's going to make your customers happier. It's going to make you just have a better product in general. And it's a great way to approach it, because then you don't have to like get focus groups together, or at least not as often, to figure out the next steps for your company, next steps for your product. You'll know what needs to happen because you'll be feeling the same pain points as your customers. That's just something that a lot of companies and a lot of developers at companies should be thinking about as much as possible. Use the tools that you're building in order to help your customers get a better experience.
So the last thing that I have to talk with you about today, Paul, is this article written by Thoughtbot developer Ben Orenstein, and he titled it Missing the Boat. In this article, he mentions that a few years ago, he wrote a pretty substantial application in JavaScript, and he really didn't enjoy the process at all. And if you're familiar with Ben Orenstein at all, or Thoughtbot in general, they're a really big Ruby and Rails shop. And so he just mentioned, you know, he's much happier writing in Ruby and building tools with Ruby. And he started worrying about, you know, if I continue down the Ruby path, will I become obsolete because JavaScript is so hot and it's growing so fast right now? But the interesting part to me was at the end of the article, he says, well, I didn't necessarily miss the boat. I just missed a boat, right? So he starts mentioning like ClojureScript and Elm and some newer tools coming out. And he's essentially saying, you know, because I didn't jump on the JavaScript train, I didn't miss the boat, or the only boat that there was to miss, essentially. He just says that he missed a boat. What do you think about that, Paul?
For me, this little article actually gets at a lot of pretty big points in programming and some things that we've talked about a bit in the past, where people are so concerned about being a React developer, or a few years ago, a jQuery developer, that they forget to just be a good developer and learn core skills, like core language skills. That's when you really miss the boat, I think. When you're so focused on new technologies, new shiny frameworks and cool things, that you're not paying attention to the larger trends in development and where things are moving as a whole. It's really easy to get so sucked into something like Angular or React or any of those tools and just be a developer of those things. And so many companies are hiring for that too. But in the end, that is what's really going to bite you, because you will have caught that boat, but you don't really know where that boat is going. Whereas if you just become a really good JavaScript developer or a really good Ruby developer or just a really good kind of all languages developer, you are going to be able to pick up any of these boats that you want whenever, really easily. You'll just be able to hop on at any point.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for me is that you can hop on any boat that you want to, or you can choose not to hop on any boat you don't want to. If Java is your thing, there's people looking for Java developers. If Rails is your thing, there's people looking for Rails developers that they don't care if they know how to use React or not. That's the biggest thing for me. And I think we talked about it in the last episode, but find stuff that you're interested personally and dive deep into that. And if you're diving deep into things that you find interesting, you'll be able to find work with those things. And I think, Paul, like you pointed out, time and time again in the development community, we'll see boats come and we'll see boats go. It's just important to know that there will always be another boat.
Hey, you. Hey, yep, you, listening to the podcast. Hold on. Hi, I'm Paul, and I just wanted to mention a couple quick things before you go. We have some awesome sponsors who I'll tell you about very briefly, and then I wanted to mention a few ways you can help support the show. Sound good? Awesome. First up, we've got Linode. For as little as $10 a month, Linode will host your own virtual private machine on their network. You get full access to your Linode boxes, and they're running on beefy server-grade hardware. If you sign up at linode.com/doesnotcompute and use the promo code doesnotcompute20, they'll give you $20 in credit, which is enough for up to 2 free months of your very own private server. Make sure to check them out today. We're also sponsored by Hired. Anyone in the market for a new job should definitely give them a look. Hired is partnered with over 3,000 companies all over North America and Europe who are looking for full-time and contract employees. It's totally free to sign up and use, and in fact, they'll actually give you $1,000 if you find a new job through them. Sign up at hired.com/doesnotcompute instead to double that thank you bonus to $2,000. All right, so if you've been enjoying Does Not Compute, there are a couple great ways to help support the show. The first, of course, is continuing to tune in. If you want to do something else, though, here you go. Leaving iTunes ratings and reviews is absolutely massive. It's easily one of the best ways to help get the word out about Does Not Compute. Secondly, Sean and I both love talking to listeners. Make sure to stop by the Does Not Compute channel in the Spec Slack or just shoot us a message at DNCcast on Twitter. Getting to know more people in the community has been one of the coolest things about making this podcast, so please don't hesitate to reach out.
Sidebar, Sarah, you can edit the rest of that out. All of it.